Soundcheck, Test, Test, Test. Soundcheck, Test. All right, welcome to the first guest lecture in IMT 4114. Thanks. May I ask you to close the door so that we don't get the sound from outside? Yeah, thank you. Welcome. So I'm going to talk today about IoT. As you probably know, IoT is Internet of Things forensics. Internet of Things. So the topic for today is security and forensics. It's quite exciting technology that is in use virtually everywhere now. There are a lot of challenges, when it comes to securing such devices, so it's not that easy. And also when it comes to the police work, when it comes to forensics, there are some complications as well. And not just complications, but also opportunities for the police officers. The overview of today's lecture is we'll talk about the introduction, what is IoT basically, the technology itself, what kind of real life applications we have out there, main security concerns and the incidents. There have been quite many incidents since 2016 and later involving IoT, possible protection mechanism, like what kind of things you can find out there, and also opportunities and challenges when it comes to forensics, like what kind of data you may extract or what kind of data you may not extract from the IoT. All right, so in general, IoT is the interconnected network of small embedded devices. This is technically a paradigm, so we cannot say that this monitor is IoT or this device. It's just a paradigm or abstraction that describes all small devices that are interconnected, that possibly work from the battery, that possibly stay somewhere out in the field, on the top of this hill. But they all interconnected and they do some kind of smart applications. Usually we have some kind of sensors and we have also actuators. So things that normally can interact with the outer world. There have been quite many applications developed over the last decade. So it's really a hype now that every company working with IT trying to integrate at least some kind of IoT solution. So this is a standard now. Unfortunately, many of the solutions, they haven't been developed with so-called security by design or privacy by design consideration, meaning that, it's not that easy to ensure that all the data is safe, at least in this device. So when it comes to the overall definition, we may find something that is called IoT ecosystem. It's just a generic, definition where we have on the right side of the slide, you can see IoT devices or IoT nodes. Those are small devices like Arduino, for example, that are powered by small batteries or solar panel. They also placed somewhere, out there without a permanent access to electricity or maybe even internet. We have IoT hubs. So IoT hubs, it's more powerful devices on the level of perhaps Raspberry Pi, where you have a proper internet connection, where you have proper power supply, and it's all connected to the internet and further to cloud or data lakes, where all this data being aggregated and put together for processing, for some kind of applications, weather prediction, for street illumination prediction, and so on. It's usually a two-way communication, so the system can read, sensor readings from the devices, but also the system can send some kind of request to execute a certain actions. And it's often a physical action, like to open the window, for example, or to close the window. So it's in a way a two-way communication, and because of this, we can also apply a lot of automation. Like if the temperature is low, then we close the window. If the temperature is high, then we open the window. Now, real-time applications. So most of the things that you will see is related to smart cities. So smart cities, everything from the smart transportation, smart waste management. You know, there've been examples when the smart waste been connecting, and actually it helped to manage the waste distribution and waste offloading more efficiently. It's also safety and security, meaning that the police can monitor, for example, the cameras, CCTV cameras, level of noise. Like, for example, in Netherlands, they had in some of the cities, they had a monitoring system that monitored the level of noise from the bars to determine if there is, for example, some kind of conflict or anything like this. So it's all smart cities. We have connected industry. So actually in this building, this is a manufacturing department, and they have a whole pipeline, from the factory that is completely automated using IoT and industrial IoT and other things. Have connected buildings, connected cars, smart energy, how to manage the energy consumption and how to reduce the energy overhead. Connected health, smart supply, smart agriculture. How many of you heard about smart agriculture? All right. That's great, because here in the region, there are some farms that are already employing a smart solution, like GPS trackers. They employ also the planning, for example. So it's a lot of things that connected to the internet, and that of course depends on the internet, and they use this data for making different processes in the farms more efficient. Wearables. So most of us use some kind of smart devices, like smartphones, smart watches, anything like that. How many of you recognize the area? It's a Hafiel. So Hafiel, and then it was one of the applications that you can use to track any kind of measurements and metrics from the device. But then it's not just the measurements from the device, but it's also contextual data. So IoT devices and smart devices aggregate a lot of data, like weather, for example, and many other things that you can put together. So it's just for fun, application that you can collect, you can check your performance, and you can track. There are some not that good examples when the Strava application has been used by soldiers. I believe it was in US, where they've been training and using the Strava application to track their pass through a military base. So technically it was something that shouldn't be public, but unfortunately it became public, so you can see the way that they prefer to use. So those are the main roads, kind of. So it's things that even the application is good itself, the final thing or the final data that you can get from IoT and all the relevant devices, it's a bit scary sometimes, because it's too much data. Now, Internet of Things, it was 2020 when we marked 50 billion of devices, like smart devices connected to the Internet. It's all types of the devices you can find out there, like from small sensors up to smart home appliances, all connected. You can talk to them, you can, do some smart applications. How many of you use smart home systems? Right. Do you talk to it? All right. So it's also the security, because sometimes, if you don't have this protection, for example, from Google, anyone can come and, ask, like, what's on your calendar, or what's your previous search request, or, things that are kind of sensitive. So it means that, the IoT is not just fun, but also it can cause or get some kind of threat picture that is not very usual for the ordinary computer systems. So why it's so popular? Basically, you know, there've been multiple factors that created this popularity around IoT. First of all, it's extremely cheap hardware. Like Raspberry Pi, Arduinos, Atmel chips, you can get, you know, down to like $1 per chip. It's very, very easy production, relatively fast, so it's easy to build, you know, the whole system from scratch. A lot of libraries, everything that, you know, you find on the internet, on GitHub, you know, you can just use on Arduino right away. You don't really need to know how the device works. You don't really need to you know, to build the device from scratch. Just connect it through USB, and you have the whole whole application running on the device. A large amount of literature, quite fast deployment process, and a lot of ready-to-use components. I will show later a slide where we have all sensors for Arduino. And technically, like smart home applications is just like a Lego. You know, you buy a lot of things, you just plug them together, and you have the whole thing ready to use. The common types that we normally recognize when it comes to IoT ecosystem, this is a processing gateway connected to the internet that has some kind of processing capabilities of older PC, probably like Raspberry Pi. We have computing end node, which is normally connected to sensors, and this can be Arduino or STM32. And then we have sensors and actuators. So these are trivial devices. They don't store any information. They just either read something from the physical world, or they manipulate something in the physical world. I'll start with the single board computers. Things like, you know, Orange Pi, Raspberry Pi, Banana Pi, all types of you know, pipes. NVIDIA Jetson that already has AI capabilities built in the chip, so you can run actually like neural networks, or deep learning on the NVIDIA Jetson. It's fairly comparable to 5-10 years older PC, so it's not super powerful, but still you might get a few cores of execution, you might get a few threads, you might get maybe 4 gigabytes of RAM, so it's a fairly comparable to the PC. You can run limited or normal versions of all operating system, like, you know, Debian, Linux, Ubuntu, Android. It has extensive set of ports, the general purpose input-output ports like UART, SPI, I2C, and the storage is normally micro SD cards. So everything that you do on your computer, you can recreate on Raspberry Pi. And a bunch of different ports like, you know, the Ethernet connection, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and whatever you can imagine to use on the normal computer. So the operating voltage is usually 5 volts, so you can use your phone charger to power the Raspberry Pi, but it requires a bit perhaps more stable power supplies that have 1 to 3 amps current delivery. So some older power supplies may not work properly. So it's just a computer that is very, very similar. There are a lot of you know, different types of devices. Some of them are in active development, like for example Raspberry Pi. Some of them are not in active development, like Android C0 on the right side. But as you can see, they all are ARM-based or similar to ARM. They all have the same, you know, functionality, connectivity, and things that you can run on those devices. Just an example of Orange Pi and Raspberry Pi. I think it was 2 or 3. And you can see a lot of connectivities and things that you can, you know, connect and you can use on these devices. It's fairly fairly broad, let's say, functionality. So anything you can do on your PC, you can also do on Raspberry Pi. But mostly it's developed for some smart application being a processing hub. Now, single board computers, as I mentioned, a second part of the IoT ecosystem, it's IoT nodes, so a bit smaller devices, and node, they don't have operating system, they have very limited functionality, they have processor which is probably like tens of megahertz, you know, it's not like thousand megahertz. They have some limited analog and digital I/O interfaces that are enough for most of the sensors and actuators out there. they also require specific firmware and specific IDEs to program those. Like for Arduino, you need to have Arduino IDE to upload the sketches that you're working. It's very limited in terms of memory, like a few kilobytes of RAM. They have some tens of kilobytes of flash. They have also EEPROM. It's a different type of storage. They consume little. It can be on the level of like hundreds of milliamps or tens of milliamps. And the operating voltage is 3.3 to 5 volts, which actually makes it feasible to run from the standard lithium batteries or even from a solar panel, like a small solar panel like this. You can power Arduino without any problems. Of course, during the day, you cannot really do it at night. It's a comparison between Arduino Nano and STM32. So it's another popular board that is often used for many projects, but they're very similar, even though they have a little bit different functionality and a little bit different software that is required. That's the schematic of the Arduino, Arduino Uno. And you can see the amount of ports. So I think it's 10 different, maybe more, 13 on this side. So 13 ports on this side, but they can be used in different modes. So it means that in Arduino, you can have so many different types of functionalities. You can connect another Arduino, you can connect temperature sensor, you can connect a motor, you can connect, for example, some illumination. So it's a very customizable platform. And the last part in IoT ecosystem, the sensors. This picture represents all types of sensors that you can find for Arduino. It's really huge, you know, from things like brightness or illumination, noise, CO2, temperature, humidity, and whatever you can imagine. They don't really consume much energy, just, you know, some trivial things, except maybe for CO2 sensors, because in those sensors, the task is to heat the air a little bit, so they consume a little bit more. And then the actuators. So actuators are usually motor-based. So it's something where you send a signal and the action, a physical action in this world happens, like opening the window, you know, closing the window, opening the door. So it's usually some kind of like trigger event that does the physical action. Of course, it can be lamps. Of course, it can be, you know, anything that you switch on, switch off. But normally we are talking about something that does the physical action. Now, main security concerns. When we talk about this novel technology, IoT, all things that been designed, you know, maybe 2000, 2005, 2010 or before, they've been designed with the older perception and older standards in IT, right? So this is rather a brown field when we have, you know, existing devices and we're trying to integrate some kind of new technologies. It's often perhaps cheaper, but also often quite complex because you need to adjust the device and adjust the protocols, adjust the communication and things like this. However, now we're also in a green field. It's a different approach when we build a lot of applications from scratch, like smart homes, you know, things like Google Nest, for example, Ajax system, so they all been built from the scratch, and then you have a better customization and better resilience and, of course, security in such systems than integrating IoT level on top of older systems. Now, when it comes to IoT, we have so many different, you know, ways to characterize. We can characterize them by applications like smart environment, smart grid. We have healthcare. We have the perception layer, like what kind of communication protocol they use. We have RFID. We have RFID is like 125 kilohertz. We have NFC 13 megahertz. We have Zigbee. We have sensors nodes, sensor gateways. We have IQRF protocol. So it's all type of how they interact and what's the purpose. You know, it can be wider area network. It can be also rather local things. And also, depending on the location of the device in the whole system, in the whole ecosystem, it can be like mobile devices that, you know, placed in the on the cars, you know, on the transportation, but it can be also something that, you know, process the data in the cloud when all this, you know, river of information is flowing into the data lake. We need to process, we need to make sure that, you know, this information is used for some purpose. Now, OWASP has this has indicated, or they actually reviewed and prepared a set of usual vulnerabilities that you can find in, you know, in mobile application, web application, in this case IoT applications. And looking at this list, you can probably see that it's very much inherited from the conventional computer server architecture. We have the insecure web interface, we have, you know, insufficient authentication authorization, we have insecure network services, lack of transport encryption and integrity verification. Well, luckily, you know, most of the communication, at least in web now, is HTTPS encrypted. So there's been, you know, a long way over the last 5-7 years when they gradually phased out, you know, HTTP in the browser. So make, or at least made, the use of insecure communication more risky and trying to protect the people. Privacy concerns, insecure cloud interface, insecure mobile interface, insufficient security configurability. So it means that, you know, if we have a complex system, we need to take in mind the security aspects on each level. IoT device, processing, connection to the cloud, storage data in the cloud, and so on. Insecure software and firmware, that's actually a big challenge in IoT because not all of the devices support over-the-air updates. Like some of the Arduinos, they support that you can update them remotely. But for many devices, like simpler devices, you cannot really do it. So it means that you need to take the device from the fields or from the mountain, bring it to the computer room, or bring computer there, connect to the computer and update firmware. So only in such way we can ensure it. Now, for physical security, it's something that we cannot really guarantee if we don't have access to the device, like temperature sensors. That is on that tree, perhaps. Can we guarantee that it hasn't been tampered? Or can we guarantee that nobody, like, heated it up or, you know, did some kind of action? So that's the common problem, how we ensure that, you know, we can monitor or guarantee this integrity, physical integrity, remotely. Therefore, we have a lot of possible attack scenarios and threats. So the threat landscape is huge. You know, as you mentioned, as I mentioned from the previous slide, it's everything, you know, from the access control to updates to configuration to, you know, using secure location. And then it created, you know, a set of vulnerabilities, or let's say we have a set of vulnerabilities that create this opportunity for attacks. So it means that the landscapes of threats and attacks in IoT even more versatile than comparing to the common computer that, you know, we can attack. We know that there are some ports. We know that there is a network connectivity. In this case, it's way more complex. Now, on this slide, you can see the type of, you know, things that we can expect being attacked, and also let's say the actions and the results of such actions. So one thing, when we are driving a car on the highway and suddenly this car became like it's impossible to steer this car, meaning that somebody took over the control. So that's a huge concern, you know, for the safety of not just passengers inside the car, but also people around. We have the smart home systems that are exposed to some of the, you know, threat landscapes. For example, what if somebody hacks the smart home system and, gets the stream from the cameras, or, you know, listens to microphones, or steals all the data, all the habits, information, and things like this. And of course, the personal health care. We cannot really, you know, allow that somebody can hack all the radio frequency communication between a pacemaker, insulin pump, and the main computer, because technically those are not Wi-Fi communication, but they have own protocols for radio frequency communication, like, for example, 433 megahertz or 315 megahertz or some other allowed bandwidth. The problem that if there is no security in the design of those devices, and the device can send a signal to an insulin pump, please pump the insulin like once an hour. What happens that somebody can eavesdrop this communication, you know, just record the moment the signal happens and then send it once in 10 minutes. So the person will get more insulin that is required. So it can be a threat to a health of the person. So we have all types of fantastic, you know, attacks that can happen in the IoT ecosystem. And it's even more dramatic because we don't really know the scale that, you know, we should expect in such case. Now, the incidents. I'm going to talk about some famous incidents that were something that nobody expected, and people didn't really expect that, you know, you can use these small devices to attack like huge organizations. Mirai botnet. How many of you heard about Mirai botnet? Perfect, perfect. So it's one of the examples a few years back when actually people realized, or the industry realized, that ensuring safety and security in IoT is a crucial thing, because small devices can create so big wave of DDoS attack that, you know, it can actually bring down the whole DNS provider in US. The problem there was that all of these IP cameras, routers, you know, all small devices, they were not properly secured. Many of the manufacturers used the same passwords. And then what happened that there was an adversarial actor that took, it's a group of people that took action. They found all possible, you know, standard passwords. There was a list of standard, like 10, 20 passwords and logins. They created a script that went, and the crawler that went around the internet and found those devices. They made a probe attack, trying login password. They gained access. They installed a small piece of software. Persistent software, and at some point there was a command please attack, and then, you know, there was a huge traffic coming to Dyn DNS provider, and then it went offline. Kyladol, how many of you know about this case? All right, so that was a fantastic case when the technology that was a smart technology, and the technology that was designed for children, became like evil technology. The problem was that I think it was in Germany a few years back, there was designed a smart doll, Kyla. So it could, you know, listen to children, it could respond with some explanation, like when the kid asks, like, what is the car? Then the doll connects to Wikipedia and fetches information about the car and reads the, know, what's the car, and other type of functionality. But then the problem that there was a lack of encryption, there was a problem with anti-swearing process, and most severe trouble was that this doll was exposed to eavesdropping the communication. So technically anyone could connect. Not probably on this picture, but technically you could listen to anything that is in the room with the doll. So if the doll is placed in the corridor and I connect to this doll, I can listen what's happening. And that was a quite severe vulnerability in the system. And then these dolls were, I think, were banned. And actually the Consumer Council in Germany asked to destroy those dolls and withdraw from the shops. So it's an example how this technology kind of turned out to be evil technology because of vulnerabilities and because of lack of proper design. Smartwatches. Many of you probably know the company Mnemonic. It's located in Oslo, a very very famous company working with incident response and cybersecurity. And they did a study in 2017 with the Norwegian Consumer Council on the smartwatches used by kids, like, you know, different parameters, whether it's, you know, secure and all types of, you know, privacy and security related issues. And they found that actually only in one of the four watches there was a promise to implement reasonable security standards. Like, come on, you know, all the data that is stored on the device can be, you know, read, can be intercepted. And the problem here, it's not that they didn't want to implement, I mean, the manufacturers. The problem was that at that time the technology was a little bit behind. And for example, you can have a smartwatch running for 3 days or 4 days without encryption, or you can have a smartwatch running 6 hours with all full-scale or full-stack encryption. So that was a problem that, you know, like sometimes they sacrifice the security for better experience, user experience. The health, so as I mentioned, pacemakers and insulin pumps, those are devices that use radio frequency communication. It's been demonstrated a few times already that those devices can be hacked. You know, you can, for example, increase, you know, the frequency of the communication in pacemakers, and it will influence the heart, you know, the rhythm of the heart. And the same can happen in the insulin pumps, when, you know, you can either pump more insulin, or you can, you know, prevent it from pumping the insulin by sending too many requests. So all types of attacks you can read on these links on the slide. Cars, it's been also a lot of, you know, types of, let's say, attacks for modern smart cars, because those have so many connectivities, those have so many different protocols, communication channels. Like one simple example is like if you have a key fob that you press to open the car, you press to close the car, you know, you don't really need, you know, to use the key, the physical key, like in old times. And the problem in this case that if you have somebody standing maybe 5-10 meters away with quite powerful antenna, they can read the whole signal that was emitted from the key fob. And then if there is no proper protection, when the owner of the car leaves the place, a person with the antenna and the device that reads the radio frequency communication can come and replay this signal. And then the car will open, right? And you can drive the car. Of course, there are a lot of protection, like better encryption. They start putting, you know, things where you need to use the phone. They start putting unique sequences. They cannot be reused. So it means that if you do it on the car, then the car will not open because this, like, identification number has been used already. So there are some certain protections. But of course, like, it's like mouse and cat, you know, they're trying to build more secure systems, and people trying to hack these systems. Now, possible protection mechanisms. There are a lot of, like, if you take the whole IoT ecosystem, there are a lot of vectors for protection. It can be on the application level, it can be on the communication level, it can be on the data storage level, it can be on the user side, you know, like training people. But technically it's very similar to the same approach which is used for the normal and conventional computer architectures. So all these kind of, you know, things we can, you know, protect against, like no standard passwords. We can, of course, you know, make sure that we use a strong password. We use, you know, most recent application and updates. We have the access control, so only a set of people can control it. The physical protection is a gray area, so we cannot really fully ensure it, but at least we can, you know, have some kind of checks and beaconing to the device to see if it's operational and if everything is correct. Antivirus protection and firewalling, this is where we have more challenges, because on Raspberry Pi, you imagine it's possible to install intrusion detection system, on the Arduino, there is no way, because it's so small, it's just tens of megahertz, and the flash card is like 32 kilobytes. However, there are some solutions like Arduino Lips. They've been already development of full stack crypto primitives, full stack of, you know, functions for block cipher, for stream cipher, that you can deploy on Arduino and successfully run. It's not that big overhead when it comes to a small amount of information. Of course, if you're trying to push, you know, megabytes and gigabytes through Arduino, there will be big trouble. But it's applicable on AVR on the upper side. The AVR is what is Arduino. It's a small chips, tens of megahertz, or ARM. So ARM processors is different set of instructions. These are Raspberry Pi, well, Apple M1, but it's out of the picture here. But technically, it's more powerful things that are used in tablets and, you know, IoT gateways. Now, the intrusion detection, this is the fundamental, you know, things in the computer security, and you're probably taking the course where you learn about, you know, things like Suricata, Snort, and so on. And it's basically applicable on Raspberry Pi. You can install a system called RPIDS and have the attack detection already on the IoT gateway side. The antivirus solution is, let's say, more tricky. There are some things, because those IoT gateways, they usually are Linux OS based, and there are some antivirus solutions that are available for Linux. So you can use such solutions as well. Now, the opportunities and challenges in IoT forensics and crime investigation, it's something that we will see how, you know, how the data can be extracted and what are the challenges when it comes to data extraction from IoT. The digital forensics process, we will also talk about the digital forensics and forensics process today in the lecture. It's a set of stages that the first responder, the police, needs to accomplish, you know, to make sure that all the evidences were preserved. So when it comes to IoT, there are challenges more related to the fact that all these devices, they're proprietary. They're custom built, there is no documentation, there is like hardly available information about the protocols, what kind of data is being stored on the device. But the good thing that the security is not in focus often, as I mentioned in the case of smartwatches. So if you take a device, there is a chance that things on this device are not encrypted. Like if you dump a firmware from Arduino, so you don't have the source code, but if you dump the firmware, then most likely, you know, you can reverse engineer and find some kind of clues in this firmware because it's not encrypted. So it's all about artifacts. There are a lot of artifacts on things like Raspberry Pi. It's a bit less on Arduinos, but nevertheless, you know, it's all relevant to the domain of normal computer forensics. So we need to extract the data from the RAM memory, then we need to extract the data from hard drive. We also need to check if the system is alive, what kind of network communication is there. Then we check, you know, the files, we check logs, we check the GPS data, and we correlate the timestamps that, you know, we have all things in place. So Raspberry Pi forensics is technically the same as computer forensics. We have, you know, a file system on the microSD card, so not on hard drive, but on microSD card. But then you use the same, essentially, tools as in case of computer forensics. And you will learn more about the tools in the lab week with Jeff. The Arduino forensics is more tricky. So if you read about Arduino, if you played a little bit with Arduino, you know that it's two procedures in Arduino. It's called setup, that setups the device, you know, assign the ports. And then we have a loop that repeats things like please read the temperature reading and please open the window. So it's a little bit more tricky to get the data from Arduino because it's quite limited, and also the information that can be stored limited as well. But nevertheless, we can get this information by either connecting another Arduino. We can also use the chip off, taking the chip. Sometimes on different boards, you have the chips that are just, you know, placed in the socket. They're not soldered, so you can just take this chip. And of course, the GTEC equivalent or the communication protocol that you can just connect and, you know, see what's on the serial monitor and see what's in this device. The data is very limited. We have basically flash card or not the card, flash memory. It's 32 kilobytes. You have EEPROM, which is 1 kilobyte usually, and then some fuses, which are just a few bytes. So this can be a dump. And then you can analyze, like, using the firmware reader, using, for example, ASCII strings search, and all types of tools relevant for such such analysis. Now, when it comes to the investigation, there have been interesting cases. It's just one of the cases with arson, but there were cases when people were convicted of murder based on the data from smartwatches. So they're pulse and the data indicated that they did some kind of like heavy stress activities around the time of the accident. But in this particular case, what happened, there was a fire in the house, and then the person claimed that, you know, the fire just erupted and the house was lost to fire. When this investigation started, they actually found that, you know, they recorded heart rate wasn't confirming this story, wasn't confirming the hypothesis that there was an accident. Actually, they found that the person was doing a very heavy running just prior to the fire, and they found that it was an arson. So the person deliberately set the house on fire. So there was insurance fraud. Just to summarize, the IoT security is often a bit behind than computer security because of the energy consumption issues, because of the resource constraint environment, and because of the limited availability of the tools, software, hardware tools to secure. There are lots of attack vectors, maybe even more sophisticated and complex than conventional computer system, but there are also tools like Arduino Leaps available to make sure that, you know, we can use encryption and we can protect the data. And of course, there are now a lot of standards, you know, a lot of new developments where, you know, the standards can help to make the IoT devices and architecture more secure. So I know that some of you looked in the IoT security already, and it's quite exciting. The IoT forensics, this is a tricky part where at first glance you may see a lot of challenges with limited access to the information about the devices, usually proprietary software, hardware, some kind of protocols, but at the same time, the lack of encryption, the lack of protection creates the opportunity for police to get more data than normally they would get from the computer systems. Yes, thank you for your attention. Any questions? Anyone? So if all clear, thank you for attending the guest lecture, and then see you at the lecture soon.